Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to NFL Live. I'm Susie Culver. It's great to see our cast today. Diana Rossini, Damian Woody, and Tim Hasselbeck. Okay, everybody ready to go? All right.
We're ready. We're going to start
with a landing spot for the newest free agent quarterback. Yesterday, the Bengals and Andy Dalton agreed to his release as a 9-year vet who led his team to the playoffs 5 times. You might expect Dalton to be in high demand for a quarterback needy team or one with past ties like the Jags. Here's Doug Marrone on Good Morning Football today when asked about Gardner Minshew.
He's our quarterback, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, but one of the things that we're doing is we're still looking to, you know, make sure that we're, you know, upgraded at each position. So, you know, we're still looking. I mean, you know, there are some veterans out there that we might, you know, look at to bring in, you know, along with the young guys that we have.
Sounds promising. And the natural connection, Jay Gruden was Dalton's offensive coordinator for his first 3 seasons in Cincinnati, Dalton's best seasons, has the same role in Jacksonville. But Diana, starting with Dalton's release, what was the timeline of how this went down?
Yeah, this came to a bit of a surprise to me because talking to the Bengals leading up to the draft, they always were stressing that Andy Dalton had such an important role to Joe Burrow's growth, knowing that we've got this condensed offseason program here. If you remember Andy Dalton's rookie season in 2011, they had a condensed rookie season for him because of the lockout. So what better person to help Joe Burrow deal with all the change and the unfamiliar? So we understand now why they made the trade, and they really wanted to work well with Andy here. There's so much respect between Dalton and this Bengals organization. They consider him family. But, you know, you have to wonder why they didn't just hold on to him a little bit longer here, because we see it every year. We see the value of quarterbacks when training camp gets here and the value they could have perhaps gotten for Andy come the summertime. And what better way to help Joe Burrow adjust to the NFL than to have Andy? But at this point, he's obviously a free man, and I am told the Jacksonville Jaguars are very interested in bringing Andy on.
Yeah, we'll get back to Burrow and his adjustment in a second, but Damian, which team do you believe would be a good fit?
I think the Jacksonville Jaguars makes a lot of sense. Number one, for what you had already said, Susie, the fact that Jay Gruden is now the new offensive coordinator down in Jacksonville. We know that Gardner Minshew is the, you know, right now as a starter with the Jacksonville Jaguars, but to have a veteran presence, you know, have a veteran presence down there as a backup quarterback to help Gardner Minshew learn this offense and potentially could come in certain situations during this season, I think would be invaluable for the growth of Gardner Minshew this season. So I think that would be a great fit for Andy Dalton down there in Jacksonville.
And Tim, what do you see as Dalton's strengths and weaknesses at this point in his career?
Well, listen, I think he has a lot of strengths. I mean, he's a guy that's got a ton of experience. He's thrown nearly twice as many touchdown passes as he has interceptions. And I think he could still play at a starter caliber level. You know, you can make an argument that he's maybe better than a third of the starting quarterbacks that we'll see week one this upcoming NFL season. And so, you know, I think if in terms of like what the market is for Andy Dalton, what the league views Andy Dalton as, I think it's somebody who certainly could be given an opportunity to compete to be a starter and play at a starter-type level. Is he a put-the-team-on-your-back kind of quarterback? No, he's not, but most guys aren't. And so I think if I were Jacksonville, New England, many of these other teams, I would be interested in Andy Dalton.
Sounds like he could find a new home relatively quickly. We'll have to wait and see. Here's one thing we do know. Dalton not alone in his journey. This offseason, several big-name quarterbacks changed teams. The biggest, Tom Brady, headed to Tampa. Phillip Rivers joined the Colts, and Nick Foles was traded to the Bears. In total, this offseason, 6 franchise passing touchdown leaders left their teams, 2 of whom, in Dalton and Cam Newton, are now free agents. And now back to the Bengals. Joe Burrow has been impressing the Bengals staff for months now, it seems. Diana, how comfortable are they, though, right now with Burrow as their starting quarterback?
Well, they've been working with Joe Burrow for weeks through these virtual meetings. We know that teams are able to meet with these prospects a few hours a week, and they used up all their time not doing what you normally do with these prospects, which is getting to know them and talking about what they accomplished in college. They went through this Bengals playbook. And right now we've got this virtual playbook that teams are using. And essentially what it is, and Tim probably knows about this, is they're basically taking these cut-ups and they're allowing coaches to do voiceovers over the plays. So they're being taught the play both visually and through listening as well. So it's really become a virtual classroom, which is helping. Now, the last time I checked in with Cincinnati to sort of get an idea where Joe's at, I was told, well, today's the start of rookie mini camp, we call it, where they will virtually meet with the Bengals every day, that being the rookies, for 5 hours a day. And Joe is already a leader of the team.
It did seem, though, Tim, like Dalton could have served as a solid mentor. So how do you feel about a rookie quarterback taking the lead?
Well, Susie, I think you're 100% correct there. I think Andy Dalton would have been a really nice asset to Joe Burrow, not one that was, you know, too expensive, to be quite honest with you, in terms of what Cincinnati owed him. So I'm surprised that they decided to just cut him loose, because I think that he would have handled things the right way. And look, I think Joe Burrow ends up being fine. I think he can handle it. He played at two different programs in college, and so I think that kind of the transition from Ohio State to LSU, having gone through that, I think is helpful to Joe Burrow. But it's not an ideal situation, but I think that he'll handle it probably as best you can. But I don't think that the Cincinnati Bengals necessarily did him any favors by not keeping Andy Dalton around.
Listen, I agree with you, Tim. I think that, listen, Joe Burrow, I think the Bengals thinking is, you know what, we just want to thrust this guy in as a starter, let him take his lumps along the lines of a Peyton Manning and some of these other quarterbacks that went up, went number one. But at the same time, this is not your typical offseason. You know, this is an offseason where you're not in the building. You know, everything is virtual. So it's going to be a different style of learning. And it would really pay dividends if you had a veteran guy like Andy Dalton who could help with the transition of your quarterback. Because number one thing is with quarterbacks, you want to make sure that they're in the best position possible to be successful in this situation. And not having a veteran in there, is, I don't think it's ideal. But Joe Burrow has been adept to, you know, learning, being with two different programs and learning multiple systems.
Also in that quarterback room will be Ryan Finley. Did get three starts last season, although all losses. And then they put Andy Dalton back into the role. All right, just to wrap this up, in the last 10 seasons, we have seen 12 rookie first-round quarterbacks start week one, including Kyler Murray last season. But there have been 18 rookie first-round quarterbacks who didn't start week one. And that list includes some big names like Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and Deshaun Watson. And speaking of first-rounders, Diana, there's a former number one overall pass rusher still out there as a free agent. Any news on Jadeveon Clowney?
Yeah, it's the news that keeps on going here. It seems that right now, a source said to me, Clowney is just the one waiting on all this. And what I was able to find out is the Seattle Seahawks have offered him multiple times a deal. The Tennessee Titans have offered multiple deals here. And both organizations have yet to strike a deal with Clowney. So for now, it just seems that Clowney isn't getting the price tag that he desires and that he's been looking for. Weeks ago, he was looking around that $20-21 million a year deal. Then he dropped it down to about 17 and a half. And even now, he's not willing to go down. So both teams told me that they're just going to sit back here. And one GM said it to me best. He says, the more time goes, the more the money dries up. So Clowney sort of loses out in the end here if he doesn't make a decision soon.
Free agency can certainly be a humbling time. All right, now we do have some good news to end this segment of the show. Broncos linebacker Von Miller tweeted Thursday night that he was negative for COVID-19 2 weeks after announcing that he had been diagnosed with the virus. On April 16th, Miller announced his diagnosis, saying he went public to emphasize that anyone can get it. So it is great to hear that Von is doing well. The Colts' big splash this offseason was signing quarterback Philip Rivers to a one-year, $25 million deal. Rivers, who is 38 years old, takes over a Colts team that went 7-9 last season and saw two of their division rivals make the playoffs ahead of them. The Colts continue to make sweeping changes to their team this offseason. In addition to the Rivers deal, they traded for defensive tackle DeForest Buckner and signed Xavier Rhodes and Trey Burton. Here's Colts coach Frank Reich on the impact Rivers will make.
When you look at when he has been at his best. And there's been a ton of great football games and great years in his career. As I think back to those LT days, you know, when he had LT and they were running the ball great. And one thing about Phillip is he knows how to create big plays in the play action game. And on the trend that we're on, I just think that he's the playmaker and leader that can help take us to the next level.
Okay, gang, let's play Sounds Good, Sounds Bad. Tim, you start us off on the Colts. Phillip Rivers taking them to the next level. Sounds good, sounds bad.
Listen, this sounds good. Next level, they were 7-9. What's the next level? 8-8? Playoff? I mean, the fact that we haven't defined next level, I'm saying this sounds really good. Look, I think Frank Reich, one, has to say it. Two, I think they are better at the quarterback position. They played, you know, two quarterbacks last year, Brian Hoyer and Jacoby Brissett. Brissett threw for under 3,000 yards, didn't even throw 20 touchdown passes. I think Phillip Rivers is a massive upgrade at the position. And Frank Reich is talking about having a run game. They have a good offensive line. They are talented on the defensive side of the ball. I think it's a much better football team, which maybe gets them into plus 500 territory in playoffs, which is no doubt next level.
Listen, I agree. I think it sounds good, too. Number one, you look at the AFC South, you know, it's not the strongest division in football. We know that Tennessee did very well, and we don't know what Houston's going to be. But when you look at Phillip Rivers, I think he gives them an identity on offense. We know that they have one of the best offensive lines in football. They drafted Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin to go with Marlon Mack, so they have a 1-2 punch at the running back position. And you know, they were right. When Phillip Rivers was at his best with San Diego, the Los Angeles Chargers, was when they were able to run the football and play action pass. So I think Phillip Rivers gives them the identity and something that they sorely need at the quarterback position.
That's Phillip Rivers' impact. As for a quarterback who has yet to find a landing spot, Cam Newton continues to search for his next team. The former Panthers QB spent the first 9 years of his NFL career with Ron Rivera, who's now the head coach in Washington. Rivera was asked if Cam would be an option for the Redskins.
The thing about Cam really is the situation. You know, we're in a situation where we've got two really young quarterbacks. One that's been with us, been in the system, understands how we want things done. And the other one's a guy that was taken last year in the first round. It shows some promise. If you go back and break Dwayne down, you see a lot of positive things. I think with Cam, and I have thought about it. I mean, it's something that has run through my mind. And it's about the situation and circumstances. I'm not sure if I would do it. I'm not sure if I wouldn't do it. It's just, again, depends on circumstances.
How's that for a direct answer? Diana, Cam Newton ending up in Washington depends on the circumstances. Sounds good, sounds bad.
This sounds really, really, really bad to me because everyone wants to know what's up with Cam Newton's market right now. What person knows Cam Newton better than Ron Rivera? If Ron Rivera wasn't banging the drum the day that Cam Newton was cut from the Panthers 2.5 weeks ago, he knows something we don't know. He was together with him for all those years. And guys, we know Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington Redskins, is a businessman. He wants a big name. He wants to be able to put fans in the seat. What better guy than Cam Newton to join the Washington Redskins to get fans excited? So the fact that Ron hasn't got to Dan to get that just tells you, if Ron doesn't want him, I think Cam's going to have a tough market. So to me, this all sounds really bad.
There is absolutely no doubt that this sounds bad. Are you kidding me? Ron Rivera basically is like, I don't know. I've thought about it a little bit. And I think he even thought it sounded bad. Listen to him kind of ramble on about the prospects of Cam Newton. The situation had to be right. I think it's bad for Dwayne Haskins. I think it would actually be bad for Cam Newton. It's not a good situation there for him with a young quarterback that was drafted in the first round a year ago. I just think, you know, Cam Newton would be better served to go kind of find a different opportunity, which I think may be out there for him once people have a better understanding of where his health is. And so I just think it's bad all the way around. And I think Rivera agrees.
As we know, the Redskins finally said goodbye to Trent Williams. The 49ers acquired the left tackle in a draft day trade last Saturday. Williams, who hasn't played in a regular season game since December of 2018, met with the Bay Area media Thursday and was asked about a contract extension.
As far as the contract-wise, I feel like we both agreed on that
We can't just take a wait and see approach. You know, I mean, it's my last year of my deal. You know, obviously, it's an incentive for me to play well. You know, give up a third round next year. So, you know, they kind of invested in the deal as well. So, I think both parties are interested in something long term. But I mean, I'm more than okay with kind of just getting my feet wet and just playing it out.
Damian taking a wait and see approach to an extension. Sounds good or sounds bad?
Susie, this is a no brainer. This sounds good. Sounds good. If you're Trent Williams and the San Francisco 49ers, look, you're talking about a guy who's 31, will be 32 years old when the season approaches. Didn't play at all last year. So if you're the San Francisco 49ers, why would you invest a long-term, you know, deal into a guy who hasn't played football in over a year? Why not? This guy's, he's motivated, and he definitely wants a new contract. So let's play it out, see how the season goes. If he plays well, then you can reward him for that.
Yeah, Dee, I'm right with you. This sounds really good to me because the phrase I heard from Trent that I think every fan in San Francisco should love is, we both agree, meaning the San Francisco 49ers and me, Trent Williams. Everybody feels like they've got value in this. So already they're starting off on the same page, and this isn't going to be weighing over them. They feel like they're married at this point, which to me, this is all positive, especially for a guy like Trent Williams, who's leaving an organization that he will say to his blue in the face that he loves and respects, but he was miserable there.
And how about the Niners? I mean, they look to be loaded coming off the draft.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Let's talk Rams. A typically busy offseason, starting with releasing running back Todd Gurley. In 2019, Gurley had his third consecutive season with 10 scrimmage touchdowns, but had a career low in rush yards. L.A. lost several defensive players to free agency, including Dante Fowler Jr., Corey Littleton, and Dekel Roby Coleman. They also lost safety Eric Weddle, who retired. In April, the Rams traded wide receiver Brandon Cooks to the Texans for a second-round pick. Cooks had a career-low 42 receptions in 2019. And finally, in the 2020 NFL Draft, the Rams filled several holes, even without a first-round pick. They drafted running back Cam Akers and wide receiver Van Jefferson, five picks apart in the second round. In fact, the last time the Rams had a first-round pick, 4 years ago, they traded way up to select this guy first overall. Always great to welcome Jared Goff to the show. Jared, just a week off the draft, and few people are fortunate enough to relate to number one overall. What's the most helpful thing that you could tell Joe Burrow to help him succeed in this transition?
You know, I think he's in good shape. He's got my former quarterback coach, Zach Taylor, as his head coach. He's going to do a great job with them. And I guess the only thing I would say is just keep that edge, keep that chip on your shoulder that you've always had. And being the number one pick, being the Heisman winner, that won't change that. And just always keep that edge.
So the Rams now into the virtual offseason. What was that very first meeting like?
It was good. It was fun. I think Sean talked about it, but the audio was not quite right at first. We had some guys that had to use their cell phones and try to call in. It was kind of weird, but he fixed it. And being the young guy he is, the tech savvy guy he is, he fixed it and got it right.
Yeah, tech savvy. Yeah, a little bit of a glitch. Here's what Sean had to say about that.
Real quick, just to start it off, today was the first day of our virtual off-season program. It was pretty smooth other than my first team invite where it was a team meeting. I somehow disconnected the only to enable audio on the telephone setting, provided some good comic relief for guys. I was feeling myself a little too much on this IT and got a dose of humble pie this morning. So, but other than that, guys handled it pretty seamlessly.
Jared, how much heat did he take for that?
Yeah, it was. I mean, there was, you know, 5-10 minutes where there was no audio at all, but there was like a phone number that we could call, and like some guys were in there, and just wondering what was going on and how it was going to work. And we had to send out another Zoom invite and jump back on there, but it worked.
It's very funny. All right. On the serious side, we know you guys have had sweeping staff changes, and I know that leans more toward changes in the defensive system with new defensive coordinator Brandon Staley. But Sean, always working to be cutting edge, how do you navigate an install without taking it on the field?
Yeah, it can be tough. We're lucky to return a lot of guys on offense and a lot of veteran, pro guys who know what they're doing. So we have an advantage there where we can speak our language and speak our system pretty seamlessly over the Zoom chat. But it is tough when you can't get out on the field and just practice what you just talked about. But at the same time, our coaches are doing a great job with it. Our players have done a great job through week one and feel pretty good about it.
But then you do have the rookies. Top two draft picks, running back Cam Akers, wide receiver Van Jefferson. I mean, they appear to be great fits. How can you help them get acclimated?
Yeah, as soon as they're able to get into town, you know, I don't know when that's going to be. I know they'll be in our Zoom meeting in the next couple weeks, I believe. But as soon as they're able to get into town, I'm able to connect with them and try to shorten that learning curve and just try to catch them up with speed. I know they're going to be both guys that will have to contribute this year, and we're excited about that.
And then you mentioned keeping the chip on your shoulder. You're expected to get better each offseason. So what have you been working on?
Man, working on a lot of stuff. Always trying to get better, always training, and it's a million things, Susie. I couldn't put my finger on one thing. I'm always trying to get better, and a lot of space to improve from last year, and just, you know, excited to get back to it, excited to get back to this season. It is tough right now without, you know, much access to fields and gyms, but at the same time, we found our little rhythm, and I'm able to get some stuff in here at my house and able to find some grass to throw at, and it's been good.
Well, look, speaking of that, the Rams have had a powerful connection to the community. I mean, through really tough times. We were out there when you were all going through the wildfires a couple of years ago, and now this pandemic. You and your teammate, Andrew Whitworth, stepped up in March by each donating $250,000 to the L.A. Regional Food Bank. What were the conversations like between you and Andrew before that generous move?
Yeah, he's always been a guy that's kind of led that front as far as, you know, being a community leader and being somebody that's, you know, wrapping their arms around people. And I think we had some talks early on, like, what can we do? How can we make a difference? And he wanted to make a big difference. You know, don't just do something that, you know, will affect a few people. Do something that can affect millions. And in our community in LA, it is so vast, and we do want to make a difference. So doing that, being able to donate 2 million meals to the LA Food Bank was special for all of us. And any way we can give back, any way we can use this platform is amazing. And I've kind of followed his lead on that, and he's been a good person to follow for that.
And now you've gotten involved with the All-In Challenge. What can you tell us about the experience that fans can bid on with you?
Yeah, no, we're going to be doing four tickets, four pregame passes, and four postgame passes. I'll sign my cleats, sign my jersey, be able to connect with the person and chat with them pregame, postgame, and be at brand new SoFi Stadium. You know, hopefully we're letting fans in there at that point, and it'll be a great day.
Yeah, Tom Brady's experience earned $800,000. You can top that?
I saw that. That. I don't know if I'll get Tom. I don't know, but you know, hopefully we can raise some money.
Jared, it's always great to see you. We appreciate you taking some time. Best of luck through this offseason.
Thank you so much, Susie. I appreciate it.
So let's take a look at some of their notable stars and how the two teams stack up. The Rams, of course, have Jared Goff. The Chargers, Tyrod Taylor, and just drafted Justin Herbert in the first round to be their quarterback of the future. At running back, the Rams have Malcolm Brown, just drafted Cam Akers. The Chargers will rely on Austin Eckler to carry the load. And on the defensive line, both Aaron Donald and Joey Bosa recorded double-digit sacks last season. Damian, which team do you believe has a better three-year outlook?
Well, I think right now you have to go with the Los Angeles Rams because they have the more known commodity at quarterback. We know that we don't know what, you know, Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert is going to be. Tyrod has been in the league for a long time, but we know that Sean McVay and Jared Goff, they've been to a Super Bowl a couple years ago. So just off the quarterback position, which is the most important position in sports, I got to give the edge to the Los Angeles Rams.
I'm just so good to hear Damian understand that it is always about the quarterback. I mean, way to go, big fella. You finally came home. You finally realized it. And you're exactly right. You're exactly right. When it, Justin Herbert, we just don't know. I mean, and I think that if we're talking about a three-year window, there's a steep learning curve for him based on what he did at Oregon. And so you look at the Rams, they're probably, you know, similar to talent, you know, to the Chargers, as we just saw on that full screen. But the difference is a quarterback who has taken a team to a Super Bowl, who's played for the play caller, who I think in many respects has probably been given a little too much kind of unfair criticism. And so I actually think it's an easy one to go with the Rams on a 3-year window.
Next time we promote the teams, Damian, we'll just show a panel of all offensive linemen.
That's the correct move right there.
There you go. Right. The special edition of E60 Project 11 debuts tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Here's Smith on SportsCenter this afternoon.
I'm doing things that I wasn't doing a month ago, and I certainly wasn't doing 3 months ago when we saw each other. And I think that's kind of what this entire process has been, is just trying to get to that next step. You know, as I accomplish one thing and that I didn't know I could do, and it's really, okay, well, what's next? How can I get there and working my way towards that? And the crazy thing is obviously as I get further down the path, I feel like I just get more fueled.
It's so great to hear from him now. And we're joined by injury analyst Stefania Bell, who brought this piece to ESPN. Stefania, what's the biggest reason that people should watch this tonight?
Well, Susie, I think right now everyone could use a little inspiration, right? And if you want to be inspired, there's nowhere else to look than the journey that Alex Smith has made over the last year and a half. You know, when we joined him and started working on this project, he had just been out of the hospital for a few weeks and the road was really uncertain. And to his credit, he opened the door and said, "Full access. You're going to see me on the good days, the not so good days. I want you there for the whole thing." And his perseverance, his focus, his competitiveness, which, you know, he's a kind of quiet and reserved guy, so you may be surprised at how competitive and driven he is, but it really is a story of hope and inspiration and family. You know, his wife was a trooper through this entire thing, and the way he leans on his family and their relationship is a big part of this story.
What makes his recovery so unbelievable and so impressive?
There's never been anything like it. And he literally has a leg that is anatomically different than the one he had before the injury. And we go into the detail of that in the piece, but the complications from a very difficult fracture followed by an infection. And in order to save him, it forced them to take some tissue from his leg. But high-level athletes are good at adapting and compensating, and it's remarkable, but he has certainly put that to use to be able to compensate for the deficits that he has in that leg, to the point where he is now doing, you've seen him in the clips here, doing football drills and agility maneuvers and preparing as if he's about to go back to football. So quite a journey for him. And the other element of this is that this is really not a typical sports injury. The fracture is, sure, but the complications afterward left him with a leg that's far more similar to a military injury. And the military did get involved in consultation for his injury. So really, it's just a fascinating journey, and we were so grateful to be a part of it.
So with that said, Stefania, what are the realistic odds that Smith plays again in the NFL?
Let's put it this way. I wouldn't want to be laying wages in Vegas against him. This guy has overcome every hurdle. You know, when we began this, he just wanted to get back to being the best husband and father he could. He was not able to care for himself. He was totally dependent on his wife. He was walking with a walker. I mean, getting back to everyday life was the biggest goal, and understandably so. But when he kept succeeding, and he kept conquering the small goals, football started to look like a real possibility. And at this point, what's everybody else doing? They're studying the playbooks. They're doing strength and conditioning and agility, sport-specific drills. Well, that's what he's doing. So I believe if Alex Smith wants to take the field and believes he can, he will.
Well, there's the physical part of it, but then there is the mental hurdle. Being out there again on the field, what do you learn about him regarding that?
every athlete deals with this when they come back from a serious injury. And there's really no way to replicate all the elements of playing in a game until you get back to playing in a game. And we talk about guys who go through other fractures, for example, or ligament injuries, especially if they happen during contact, and they have to get back on the field and take that first hit until they really know that they're going to be okay. And I imagine it will be the same for him. Now, he's got the kind of personality that I don't see him being fearful going into it. But certainly the ultimate challenge is getting back on the field and facing that contact again and getting up from it, knowing you're going to be okay.
Right. To that point, he said on SportsCenter today that he's really bummed that there aren't regular OTAs right now. Like, he's really itching to see how he looks with actual teammates, not playing against his wife and kids.
I know they're good stand-ins to a point, but they are little children, so.
The clock is ticking and the Bears have a decision to make. Mitchell Trubisky and all other 2017 first-round picks must be informed before Tuesday whether his team will pick up the fifth year of his rookie contract for the 2021 season. So today we've seen two teams make decisions on players with a fifth-year option. The Titans picked up Adoree Jackson's fifth-year option, but declined the option for Corey Davis. The 49ers also declined the option for Solomon Thomas. Let's stick with Trubisky here. Tim, what do you think the Bears should do?
I want to pick it up. I mean, quite honestly, you know, you're essentially guaranteeing Mitchell Trubisky $25 million by picking up the option for next season. And I don't even think you can have the confidence that he'll be your starter for this entire upcoming season. Now, I understand the risk. The risk is that he goes out and plays great, and if you want to hold on to him, it becomes exponentially more expensive. But based on what we've seen from him, his injury history, his lack of accuracy, I think it's a chance that I would be willing to make or take if I was Ryan Pace. So if I'm the Chicago Bears, I'm not picking it up.
I totally agree, Tim. I think, you know, with the inconsistency of Trubisky, the way he's been playing as of late, and you go and trade for Nick Foles and bring him into the mix to push him. There's no way that I'm picking up the fifth year option. If he comes through in the clutch and he plays great, then guess what? I can franchise him to hold on to him, but I'm not picking up the fifth year option.
Yeah, guys, I actually like looking back at the 2017 draft. You look at their top five picks, right? You got Myles Garrett, Mitch Trubisky, Solomon Thomas, Leonard Fournette, Corey Davis. Obviously, Myles Garrett's deal was exercised. Mitch, we're not sure about. Solomon Thomas declined. Leonard Fournette to be decided there. And Corey Davis declined. Okay, so that's the top of it. But how about at 8, 10, and 12, you have McCaffrey, Mahomes, and Watson. So all those guys picked ahead. You get those three at 8, 10, and 12. All their options picked up. So, you know, if you're those teams, you're going, well, we certainly won in this one.
Yeah, and Tim, it just goes to show just how incredibly unpredictable it all is.
Oh, absolutely. But I want to make the same mistakes that probably the Tennessee Titans made a year ago with Marcus Mariota. So, wouldn't do it.
Yeah, it hard to predict heart and how people will operate at the next level. Right,
mm-hmm.
Damian?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of NFL Live. Coming up next is The Jump. We hope everybody has a great and safe weekend. Be smart out there, and we'll see you back here for another full week of NFL Live coming next week here on ESPN. Take care, everyone.